Technorama episode 672, this is May Day.
That's not the title.
Yeah, I know. I was scrolling. I didn't even have the title up. I was going from memory.
It's May 4th. This is the May. You know, like The Mandalorian, what? This is the way.
Nope. No,
instead of May the 4th.
You have to remember, I don't have Disney Plus. I've never seen The Mandalorian.
Well, you don't have to. Our listeners do.
Okay, then you do the opening line.
This is the May. I know it sounds stupid.
You don't sit. Yeah, no, it doesn't.
But he's, you know, The Mandalorian say this is the way.
Okay. So. Shouldn't it sound more like,
this is the May?
Yeah, right.
You have to be behind a helmet.
Come on, man.
Okay, well. We tried, because it's May, this show goes out on May the 4th, actually, and May the 4th be with you.
That's right. And I'm kind of surprised you haven't seen The Mandalorian, because it's really good.
I saw two early episodes that were bootlegged for me. Brian Brown got them to me on a USB stick, and I asked no questions.
Oh okay. But yeah, the whole series was good.
I understand. Anyway. I just have enough streaming services right now.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah. It's getting pretty crazy. All right, we're not here to talk about streaming services. Sponsored by Friends Plumbing, a straight flush beats a full house. That's right.
He must write these down throughout the week.
I know I have to.
A little cut and paste in there.
We didn't even start out with our opening line. Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are joining us for the first time and wondering, what are we bantering about? Well, it's a couple of geeks just bantering about. And that's what we've been doing since 2005. Yeah, imagine a podcast that lasts that long on so little. I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona. And joining me right over there is Craig Stepp. Hi, Craig.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
You waved the wrong way.
Oh, it's like that scene with Captain America. He's talking to the, it's one of those presidential fitness things. And he says, just like your teacher over here. And the guy was on the other side of the TV. Anyway.
Okay. We have a wonderful show lined up for you today. Thank you very much, Craig, for all the stories. We do this as a team. Craig does some work. Guy do some work. And it all comes out. In the sausage factory that we call Technorama.
First, there's an I in our team, by the way. I'm just kidding.
Oh, you poke your eye out.
I'm sorry.
Let's do the history. No, let's do the feedback section. We had a question for you last week. And you get to do that dance.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters.
What are you dancing that Bilbo Baggins over there?
Yeah.
Reach right in and pull one out. Those letters, I love those letters. Let's find out what you've got to say.
Oh boy!
Mailman, mail today.
All right.
Okay, apparently I just noticed Facebook, we have community standards on here.
What?
Yeah.
When did that start?
I don't know, I was at the bottom of the chat. It says community standards, so I clicked on it. It says, our community standards. These policies come from the feedback from people on Facebook and the advice of experts. These policies include different views and beliefs and are especially meant to protect those who might otherwise be overlooked and marginalized. Bullying and harassment. Keep everyone respected and welcome by avoiding doing things that threaten or bully another. Hate speech. People should be protected, especially from attacks on their race, ethnicity, religion, language, gender, or sexuality. I understand. I'm going to click the... I don't want to see all standards. I understand.
Not the feedback we're looking for tonight.
No. Well, I just never noticed that there. So I hope everybody understands that we are, you know, equal opportunity and diverse and all that stuff. Because geekdom knows no bounds.
Coming from a couple of white guys. A
couple of old white guys.
Yeah. That's right.
No, that's true. We like everybody.
Absolutely. I don't discriminate.
Back to the feedback. Our question of the week last week was, what's the most ridiculous thing you saw a computer illiterate person do with a computer? And
yes.
You start us off, Craig.
All right. So our buddy Steve London, he actually gave us a lot of feedback.
He's good for the tomes, isn't he?
He is. He says, I had a user call her down to call down to help the help desk complaining about her mouse not working properly and had and hard to use.
Okay.
And it never had been working ever. So I went there with a new mouse to exchange it, and she was on her lunch break. The old mouse worked, but I exchanged it anyway. Her screen was messy and full of fingerprints.
Oh, dear. So keep going. Keep going.
And then she called again. So I went there again to check, and it was a brand new mouse. Apparently, she was using the monitor screen as the mouse surface, putting the mouse over the cursor. All right. Her main complaint was it was hard to get the cursor out of the corners.
So she was taking the mouse and rolling it around on the screen? Yeah, like
putting it on the screen and using that as... Okay. Well, now we know why her screen was so messy. And, of course, the classic computer reboot by pressing the monitor button off and on. You know, people think that that's turning the computer on and off.
Maybe she started out computing with a light pen. And you had to interact with the screen to know exactly where to... That's all I can think of.
Anyway, so no, she wanted me to. All right, so you want me to restart the hard drive, which people obviously call the hard drive, the actual computer itself,
the floppy disk.
Yeah, I've had that a couple of times. I'm thinking in my mind, I'm thinking hard drive. No, not a hard drive. They think that's the hard drive. Why didn't you say so? Oh, okay, let's reboot that. I thought you tech guys would know what a hard drive was. Yep, I know. Been there. I know John Miller Jr. has been there too.
John Miller Jr. said, had a person back in the Windows 98 era called me worried that he committed a crime due to an illegal operation error. I was asked to explain
Whose
this
law
to
am
the
I breaking here.
Could you explain this to the local police department?
Yeah.
I like that one.
That is actually pretty good. Weber Baker said, we had a woman who got an electric shock from her keyboard. Part of her job was opening mail and removing staples, which she let fall into the keyboard. They created a circuit. And it was full of staples, and they started sticking up between the keys.
How?
Oh,
I didn't know there was that much voltage going through a keyboard.
I think what he's saying, she thought she had an electric shock. It was actually
just staples poking her.
That's what it sounds like. Maybe. Yeah.
Okay. Listener and patron John Noble says, I called
that John Noble.
Yes. That John Noble, our John Noble. He said, I called the help desk to let them know my hard drive had crashed. They didn't believe me, so they sent a team of three up to check my computer.
Three.
Hey, wait for it. After much time running through a number of options, they told me my hard drive had crashed and my CD had gone bad. After they left, I went into the BIOS and reactivated the CD, which they turned off by accident when they were trying to figure out what was wrong with the computer. Oh, so they were messing around with the BIOS settings and disabled. Wow. That's some fine support right there.
Right. Yep. Again, John Noble, he says, using MS-DOS to get back to the home directory, they reached behind the computer to turn it off and back on again.
To get to the home directory? That's a hard way to get back to your home directory.
I was just thinking, I guess they would just drop them to the... Okay, I guess it kind of makes sense. That's weird.
Gary Lindros has three of them. He says, the CD drawer as a drink holder. Oh, that's a classic. Until it automatically closes and dumps your drink all over the place.
That's right.
Monitor on to act as a light in a room. Hey, I do that sometimes.
Yeah.
It's when I draw the shades in here and turn out the lights, it is dark and I want to still be able to see. So I have a couple of screens stay on until 9:30 PM. So,
oh yeah,
they will go off at night. I mean, I'm not wasting energy, and I don't want this thing lit up like a Christmas tree.
It's better just to get some LED lights in there so you can just turn them on.
Third, he says, wrapping a computer up in fabric so it would look prettier and blocking all the vents.
Really? Okay.
Oh, that's not. I've heard people doing that with their air conditioning units, like outside the house. They like put a pretty cover on it and they completely
who would do that? Wow.
There are.
You know, if you could make it prettier by doing that, they would design it like that. I don't know.
Somebody needs to tell them.
And Lone Guy's Night says, turning it on, you know, turn it on.
Let's see. I had
people just have trouble doing that.
I had one response to my share, but it was just somebody could give this a try. So nothing else happening out there with the answer, but thank you for the entertaining stories. Craig, did you have a story?
I've shared it on here several times. You know, when I was, well, there's a bunch of stuff, but the one that cracks me up is when I asked that guy on the phone to double click on my computer so I can go into the control panel. Yeah. And he said, how can I do that? Cause you're on the other side of the phone.
Click on my computer.
No. I know. Click on my, well, how can I do that?
There's an icon that says my computer.
It took me a minute when he said, how can I do that? I was like, oh, he's literally.
It does take you a second when they throw you off on something so obvious. That's the beauty of having kids. They help you point out the obvious a little earlier because.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of another situation
Do you have one from Harrison?
Kind of like, with Harrison?
Yeah. I mean, illiterate doesn't mean adults that are just starting out a computer.
No.
All kids have to be introduced to this technology at some point or the other.
I would say kids nowadays in the internet age, pretty quick to pick stuff up.
They're horrifically quick. When my great nephew,
I don't remember anything specific.
Yeah. My great nephew was maybe two, and I had the Pebble watch at the time, and he saw my watch and he started swiping up and down on the watch because he saw e-paper?
Yeah, e-ink type thing.
E-ink, yeah. And he starts swiping, and all I have is the option to, like, okay, let's go through the menu so he at least sees something happen when he's swiping.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's like, wow, that was scary. Now, we go back to when Julie was, like, 18 months old, maybe two, just turning two, and I've told this story before. I was teaching her how to use a mouse. She was previously using a game called Baby Smash. You hit a key, any key, and it will put a color and a shape and make a sound. And you hear, boink, boink, ding, bonk, bonk, you know, red circle, gray square, that kind of thing. Well, she was graduating to learning to control things. And I forgot what the game was called, but you had to click and drag a ball into the appropriate colored box. So if you get a red ball, you put it in the red box. You get a blue ball, you put it in the blue box. And as soon as you click the ball, the computer would start going, feed me, feed me, feed me, feed me, feed me. And you drop it in the box and go, yum. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she didn't quite understand the concept of drag and drop. So I put her hand on the mouse and I put my hand on her hand. And I said, now, Julie, watch. And I put my other hand on the screen and I moved the cursor left. And the mouse went left, and I moved the mouse right, and the cursor went right. I went left, right, left, right. Took my hand off of hers on the mouse, and I said, now, Julie, do. And she goes, F-right, 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 F-right. And it's going diagonally at 800 miles an hour, right? Okay, close enough. She got that concept. We're good. Yeah. Now, let's try the other one. I said, put my finger back on the screen, other hand on her hand. And I move her hand away from us, and the cursor goes up the screen. And I said, up. And I pull it towards us, down, up, down, up, down. Lifted my hand off of her hand on the mouse, and I said, now, Julie, do. And she proceeded to lift the mouse off the table and go up, down, up, down, up, down.
And then she put it on the screen and tried to move the mouse on the
screen. No. Yeah, out came the liquid paper.
Right.
I went, wow, this kid, I didn't realize it at the time, but in hindsight, genius. She's thinking in 3D. She had the third axis that I completely ignored. But it was kind of like when I was learning music. You know, why are the notes going up and down on the scale when my hands are going right and left? Think about it.
Yeah.
That's a confusing concept. She did exactly what you told me. She literally did. Up, down, up, down.
That's right.
I love that story.
And yeah, there's probably a bunch of stories I could probably think of when, especially phone support, you know, because it's that thing where describe how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, you know, situation where you have to do it in such detail where the person that actually follows your instructions does it properly.
Oh, have you done that exercise? It's a communicate, like make toast. Yeah. Make
right.
toast.
Well,
is
that's
a
what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was getting at is for phone support. It's kind of like that too. You want to get somebody to some place on the computer. You got to say the things just right. Otherwise you're both looking at different stuff and it's, you
heck
know.
Yeah. Communication yeah. is what the listener does. So many stories. So many stories.
Yeah.
Just don't embarrass anybody in particular. No. Julie is well aware of this story and laughs at it with me every time. Because I make her out to be the hero because she made me look dumb.
Well, I sit there and try not to embarrass my wife at any point, anywhere.
The learning opportunity for me on that story was that it gave me a whole new respect of where people start from. Everybody starts from zero on any kind of technology or any new project or any skill. You have to be taught, and you can never really assume you want to understand where they're coming from and what they understand. I remember when my grandmother was still alive, she asked me, what's the difference between hardware and software? And I put it in terms she could understand. I knew she was a musician. I knew she was a piano teacher. And I said, think of the hardware as the piano, the strings, the keys, the board. This is
tangible,
the hardware.
So, yeah.
It can do a lot of things if you give it the proper instructions. Now, if it were a player piano, the software would be the different scrolls that you put into it. If I put in one scroll, that's the software that tells the piano how to play a particular song. She totally got it. Like, oh, that's easy enough. Because she was 90 years old. And this was, 20, 25 years ago. Going, all right.
That was when she was starting a new career as an IT help desk technician.
Computer.
Well, I've said this to John Miller Jr. Before, I'm sure, but when we were having people bring computers in to our ISP that we had, when they left, I ultimately there was somebody in the office. I'm not saying John did, but other people would go, "Wow, what an idiot!" They didn't know how to do this or they didn't know how to do that. And I'm thinking, well, these are doctors, construction people, and they have other professions.
Yeah,
they don't
this is
this
not their primary job.
Yeah.
They're looking to you as an expert. Can you imagine if you went into the doctor and he said, I got this nail sticking out of my arm. The nail gun backfired. And they go, God, what an idiot.
And to that point, I remember, I've also talked about this too before, is I was doing some computer work in an office, and I don't remember what I said to the person, but obviously it was taken the wrong way. And the manager of the place called me in his office before I was ready to leave for the day.
Uh-oh.
And he said,
Craig, I'd like to see you.
Well, she actually told me that, everybody, there's all levels of expertise. And I remember that to this day, which goes to your point about, these people may know how to use a computer to a degree, but this is not their profession. And so anyway,
at least now we have screen sharing capabilities.
Oh, wow.
But not everybody gets it. It's amazing how much
run in an ISP and they can't get on the internet.
They got to call you. But I swear at least 2 out of 3 weeks that I call my parents on Zoom, my dad can't figure out how to turn his camera on. It's like, see the little camera icon down in the lower left corner? Yeah, just click it. But it doesn't show up. As soon as you move your mouse, it will show up. It seems like there are certain people that don't absorb technical information, or maybe they don't retain it. I'm not sure which of those two is true. But just the way people are wired. There's certain things my wife can tell me something 3 times and I don't remember.
Well, I mean, there's been several times I've tried to explain something to someone without actually being at their computer or something. So, you just do this. You just got to show me because I don't know. And they just want to close it off and don't want to think about it or just go, I don't know. Yeah. I'll have to look at
it
together.
Don't give up. And don't get frustrated. There's somebody that does that on a regular basis. Like, if I delete a slide in PowerPoint, do I need to save it? Like, well, I don't, you tell me, do you need to save it? Because I deleted a slide and then I opened it back up and it was still there. Well, like, if you're going to close it and bring it back up, you want to save your changes. But if you just want to delete it and play, no, you don't have to save it to get rid of the slide. It's like, there's certain concepts that just seem intuitive to us that are not intuitive to other people.
Oh, gosh, yes. Well, John Mayland Jr. said, you're absolutely correct, Craig. That's the only part of that message I wanted to show. I'm just kidding. He said I had to learn that lesson. There are different types of different types of expertise. I can build a computer, but I can't perform a heart transplant or rebuild an engine. And I remember that.
I can't rebuild a current engine, but you know, like a lawnmower engine. Sure, I can do that.
Well,
The engine out of a car or the rocket engine. No,
John, you could probably find a YouTube video on how to do that heart transplant.
You can find a YouTube video on anything. All right, should we close out this segment? We have been going a long time on that.
Another letter from our listeners today.
And that brings us right into the history segment. On this day in history for May 4th, where have I heard that number before? 2022. This is the 124th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 241 days. Wow! 1, 2, 4, 1. Same numbers, different order.
Yeah.
They add up to 365. How does that happen? That's really weird.
Magic. Okay.
I wonder if that happens anywhere else. Probably not, because anyway. Remain in 2022. We are really getting strung out here, aren't we?
Yeah.
It was on this date in 1493. I'm trying to get the audio adjusted here. 1493, that Pope Alexander VI divided the New World between Spain and Portugal along the... this is better. Line of demarcation.
And it was that same date in 1626 that Dutch explorer Peter Minuit arrived in the New Netherlands, presently day... Manhattan Island. Aboard the Seamew. It's like a cat ship or something. Seamew.
And wait, wasn't New York called New Amsterdam? So New York and New Netherland. Wow, these people are really incestuous with their names, aren't they?
I think that's They Might Be Giants song, right? No.
Also on May 4th, 1904, the United States begins construction on the Panama Canal. A man with a plan thing.
That's right. And also on this date in 1953, Ernest Hemingway won the Pulitzer Prize for The Old Man and the Sea. Hey, I was just at his house. And I was.
Did you say hi for me?
He wasn't there.
Did you line up a podcast interview?
Hey, he wasn't there, but his 53 cats that are still there are there.
Stuffed and mounted on the shelves?
No, they're walking around. I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay. May 4th, 1972, the Don't Make a Wave Committee... Does that sound familiar? Not to most people.
Sounds like my career. Don't make a wave.
or what you do at the opposing team's sporting event.
Yeah.
A fledgling environmental organization founded in Canada in 1971 officially changed its name to the Greenpeace Foundation.
Okay. And 108 years ago today, I'm sorry, the 108 story series. I'm so used to that being as part of the beginning there. The 108-story Sears Tower in Chicago was topped out at 1,451 feet as the world's tallest building on this date in 1973.
Now known as the Willis Tower. What a shame. I still call it the Sears Tower.
What are you talking about, Willis?
It was also on this date in 1998 that a federal judge in Sacramento, California, gave Unabomber Theodore Kaczynski 4 life sentences plus 30 years after Kaczynski accepts a plea agreement sparing him from the death penalty. Happy birthday goes out on this day to Italian instrument maker, inventor of the piano. Oddly enough, we were just talking about pianos. Bartolomeo Cristofori, born on this date in 1655.
And Jean-Charles de Bourdois. The French mathematician, physicist, and sailor was born 200 89 years ago today, and he's still kicking.
Maynard Ferguson, Canadian trumpet player and band leader, was born on the same date in 1928.
And also born on the same date in 1953, American actress and singer Pia Zadora.
Pizza Dora?
Pizza Dora.
There's a pizza man at the Dora. Also turning 66 today is American astronaut and engineer Michael L. Gernhardt. Listener birthdays this week include Joe Machowski, a host of On the Podcast, Amber Pace, not really a listener, but a mother and a wife of listeners. Are you listening now? Hey, go tell her my happy birthday. Another one on the 6th, Bill Barber. And we continue with birthdays on the 6th, Steve Bickle. And just because 3 isn't enough, we want 4. We have our very own Brian Brown.
Yay.
On May 6th. Rounding out the birthdays on May 8th is Curtis Parrish. Parrish
the
thought.
Happy birthday, Curtis.
Happy birthday to all of you. And if it's your birthday, and we didn't call your name out, it's because you're not on the calendar. So Craig can tell you how you can get on the calendar.
Yeah, go to chuckchat.com/birthday and you'll find it.
Ding! And we will give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. But if it is your birthday and you're not on the calendar, well, happy birthday to you as well. Maybe next year we'll call you out by name, if that is indeed your choice. Maybe you value your privacy. Let's, are we done yet? How close are we? We're not even close.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. It was a short one tonight.
Get out of here.
Jeez, you don't have to be nasty about it. Let's get on with the news with a random blue button here.
Good news, everyone.
Okay, that was a little loud, but okay. Yeah. We're going to still tweak the audio levels. I got to remember to save the settings once I dial them in.
Yeah, first, <that'd> be nice.
First news story is the first private mission. If it's private, how do we know about it?
Well, it became public.
Private mission to the ISS splashes down off the Florida coast. This was, of course, last week, April 25th, is when the rocket splashed down. We had the mission dubbed AX-1 for the first human space flight from Axiom Space. They are the company that is, apparently, they were going to be building their own space stations. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, it says they plan to build their own commercial space stations in the future. But they partnered with SpaceX to send a private crew up to the space station that we currently have. So
they were only supposed to go up for, what was it, 5 days? And it turned eight days, something like that. It was supposed to last just 8 days, but because of the weather in the area, they needed to come down. It's sort of like when you go for a flight and you're like, well, it looks fine here in Phoenix, but I can't get to Minnesota because it's snowing.
Okay. That's right.
That's what they had around Florida. So they were there 15 days. Like, wow, hope you brought some extra socks.
I'm sorry. I only packed enough underwear for, 8 days.
Next time you bring some supplies, bring a few extra days.
That's right.
So that was cool. The cost of the trip was reported at $55 million per ticket for the 4-man crew. So that would be $220 million? Ooh.
Yeah. And it doesn't cost that much to send SpaceX rocket up. So
yeah, $50 million of that went right into Elon's pocket.
Yeah. Maybe.
Well, he's gotta pay back Twitter somehow.
Yeah, that's right. So I thought that was pretty cool. And there's a kind of a follow up to that story, because right after that, let me go pull up. There's another historic mission, not just because it was private. The other one was private, but this one, SpaceX launches another historic astronaut in the mission, and it's Jessica Watkins. She is the first Black woman to join the space station crew.
It's about time. Now, there's been other Black women in space, usually aboard the space shuttle, doing shuttle missions, but it's like there have been 200 people. What was that number? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. There's been 200 people since 2000. And this is the first Black woman to go to the International Space Station.
Isn't that ridiculous? It's taken that long?
It is ridiculous. And the quote was saying that this is certainly an important milestone, I think, for our space agency and for our country. And I couldn't agree more. So she actually has a long history with NASA. She started as an intern, and she's previously held roles at NASA's Ames Research Center and at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, where she actually worked on the Curiosity Mars rover.
And she got her, what was it, her pilot's license in 2009?
Oh, did I miss that? Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was a different crew member. Christopher Eddy, the Italian Air Force.
Forget that guy.
Her.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, I thought you said Christopher. Oh,
well, that was the last name. Hang on. Christopher Eddy. What? Did I spell it wrong?
All right.
Anyway,
we're killing the show here.
Yeah, we're dead air doesn't make for a good show.
Well, if we're talking a lot at the beginning of the show, we're sure are stopping.
What? I want to know this person's first name. I can't find it in this article. Samantha Christopher Reddy.
Okay. All right. Got it.
All right.
Good. Okay. Great.
Great story. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah.
One more for you on the news. Yeah. And this is a way to help replant burned out sections of British Columbia. They're using drones to drop seed packets. Actually, they call them pucks, to help replant the trees. Because if a human walks around with a 40-pound backpack, their team can do like 1,000 to 3,000 trees. They take the little saplings, you know, maybe a few inches high, or for those that aren't doing inches, maybe about 15 centimeters high, and they go dig a hole, put the tree in, crush it with your foot. Not crush it, but you'll firm it up. You plant it and you move on and you do the next one every few feet. You're like, doink, 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 doink. And you get a whole bunch of little trees up the hillside. Well, there are places where they can't reach. It's too steep or it's too remote or whatever. Yeah. And terrain, there's just a lot of done. They had some crazy hot wildfires that burned out some sections of land where it actually burned the seeds. Now, there are some trees that need fire to open up their cones and spread their seeds. But these fires ran so hot that it just, like, literally scorched earth. It was just, there's nothing viable to regerminate. So they took some of these drones, and these are big drones. They're like 3-4 feet wingspan.
Yeah, you can kind of, I see a guy work, there's a picture of a guy working on a propeller on one. Yeah, and it is kind of big.
And they fly these to the remote sections and then drop some of the seedlings in a controlled fashion. It's not like, okay, zip, there goes the big bag of seeds. And they're all,
there's like 20 trees, right?
All cramped together in this 4-foot section. Yeah, no, that's right. It's a little more prepared than that. There are some places that they say they can't get, if it's too extremely steep. Or I read that the south exposure to a mountain may be a little too harsh. I mean, even for the saplings that they plant, it would be tough to grow in the heat and exposed. Because you got to remember, after a fire, it's pretty much wide open. And so there's a lot of science that goes into this. It's crazy.
What was it? In Florida, was it the mangrove? They were talking about replanting stuff there. In some of the areas where it kind of gone away, and they were going to use drones, and they were doing the same, I think, similar thing where they had these like little cone shaped, pods, like you were talking about.
Yeah.
And it would go, and they would go, they were up high enough. So when they hit the ground, they would go in deep enough without having to have somebody step over them, you know?
Yeah. That would work for little seedlings or saplings, but these are actually just the seeds.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was talking about. They went and it would go into the ground enough where it could pick up, you know, maybe it would rain and some dirt would go over it. But anyway, you get the idea.
They put
I thought that was a cool video, the one I saw.
The article says they put the seeds in a small vessel called the puck, which contains a mix of soil and nutrients to give the seeds the best chance of germination. The first round of drone planting, about 10,000 pucks were dropped per hectare. And there's about 52 hectares in total. What a weird unit of measurement that is.
Hectare.
Hectare.
What does hectare think?
Oh, the hector, what he thinks.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Let's move on. We have a Hacks and Strange Stories, which means the red button. That's the one.
That's right.
Go ahead. Take us in.
This is pretty cool. This is using a, this guy did a, he was using an oscilloscope, but it, on his YouTube channel, he was using these little glass globes or
domes. Yeah.
Some of them little domes. It's kind of what you had, see like an old clock in or maybe a Christmas ornament, you know, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he was using screens, various types of screens, LCD screens, or even an oscilloscope to do some of the pepper ghost effect where you put in a sheet of, it could be glass, plexiglass, or he was using a transparency, like we're an overhead or something like that, and at a 45 degree angle. And when you do that, it looks like whatever you're projecting from up under kind of looks like it's floating there in space. Of course, it has to all be black around whatever the object is. It's like in one video was a lemon. I think there's a picture of it.
Yeah.
Thing. So everything's black except for the lemon from up for being projected from up under, but it looks like it's hovering there. Kind of like, I'm surprised they didn't put like Princess Leia, you know,
inserting the SD card into R2-D2.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep doing that. But it's a really cool effect. And I've seen it before, but I looked around online. I looked at his YouTube channel and explained how he did it. And I thought it looked like fun.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, but the really cool one was, and you can see it in his YouTube. If you go to his YouTube channel, he had some old black and white TVs off to the side.
The moon one.
Yeah, had one screen under the dome. So the moon would go, whoop, whoop, go back and forth, right and left.
And it was rotating as it was moving right to left.
Along with the music he was, the synthesizer kind of music he was using, maybe go whoop, 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 and he would change the tempo and it'd go buh, 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 go back and forth really quick. It was really, really cool. So go check out some of those videos. We have a link to the article on and his YouTube channel in the show notes.
Didn't they use this effect in the Haunted Mansion at Disney World or Disneyland?
I wouldn't, if they did not do it, I would be very surprised.
I thought they mentioned Disney says. This is kind of in an interview style, and the writer says, when and why did you decide to start playing with Pepper's ghost? He said, it started in 2019 when I was watching the Imagineers documentary series on Disney Plus. The early episodes exploring the innovations with Pepper's ghost illusions, and had always been fascinated by the technique. So I believe they did use them at Disney for a few things. That's pretty darn cool.
I'm sure. It is cool. And it's a great effect.
David Copperfield made like something disappear too. It's like he was just. I'm pretty sure this has been used by illusionists.
Well, I was thinking it'd be cool to have like a little Raspberry Pi and a small screen and something like this with a clock. You know, you'd see the number show up on the. You'd have to skew them a little bit so they would look straight when you're looking at them, right?
But I think this guy also had a waterless aquarium too. So he had an aquarium. And then you put the screen in there, and the screen from the bottom was showing fish swimming around.
Yeah, like, it'll go.
I want that because then you don't have to clean it.
That's right, or feed it.
But you have to have a really bright projection. You can't just put any old screen under there, or maybe you could.
Because he also had.
This is how teleprompters work. I mean, when you think about it, you're looking at the camera, and you've got like an iPad laying down in front, and then it reflects off of the 45 degree.
Exactly.
Clear screen.
Right. And what I did like, also he did some oscilloscope ones. So he had oscilloscope has a circular display on it, and he had a little globe sitting on top of it and with images of, you know, various little vector graphic looking images. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. That was neat where it was drawing the cube and then undrawing the cube.
Yeah. And then he had one cube with a bunch of cubes in it. It's kind of
a lot of fun with around. That. All right. Quick shout out to the chat room. Who do we have still hanging around?
Let's see. Well, of course, we got John Miller Jr.
Yep.
He's been very active. We got Mike Robeson, John Miller Jr., Dan Coyer.
Dhruv Gupta was in there earlier.
Yeah, Dhruv. Technorama podcast. Oh, wait, that's us.
I thought Gary stopped by. Maybe not. Nope. That must have been during the comments.
Yeah.
That's wow, my video got really grainy again.
What's up with that? I think you need to pay your internet bill.
Whatever. I was doing that yesterday on karaoke too. It could be. Don't know.
Maybe you should look at Starlink.
Well, it looks fine on this end as I'm watching the monitor for StreamYard. Okay. Gonna have to check that out. I mean, I could leave and come back into the room. That'll probably fix it, but we're in the middle of a show here.
No kidding.
So I'm doing my 8-bit Mario thing.
Hey, Chuck, let's check your internet connection. Click on my computer. And
how can I click on your computer?
That's right.
Okay, let's get into the Remember When section. That'll be a lot more fun. Okay. So this is the 40th birthday, or the year the Sinclair ZX Spectrum turns 40. And I'm going to say ZX because this is a British computer.
Yeah.
And it's just more fun to say that, I think.
It sounds better.
And I'm not going to read this whole thing in with a British accent. But what I will tell you is if you haven't seen this computer, if you're not familiar with a lot of your old classic computers, you got to check this one out. I just had a lot of fun reading the ad. All right, the article was a lot of fun, but holy wordy ads. That's all I can say is you look at any ad in a magazine these days, it is so tight.
Yeah.
This is more like a user manual.
It looks like a 6-column article. Really.
It's a full 2-page spread. Yeah, and it's got 6 columns. It really does. Now that you mention it, it looks more like an article with an order form that you can clip out, fill in the number of things you want. I want 2 Sinclair ZX computer with 48K RAM version, code 101. No, that was not intentional. For £175 a piece, which I believe today, the base model was 16K of RAM for £125, which was about 170. They did an adjustment in adjusted inflation, and it was something like $600 in today's money. That's a lot of money for a little computer. But the thing about the Sinclairs was, they weren't the most powerful. They were based on Z80s, and I think it was like a 3.5 megahertz Z80.
Yep.
And they didn't come with a screen. They were proud of the fact that it was a full motion keyboard, meaning you push the button down. It wasn't a membrane keyboard, which were kind of common on the cheaper models of stuff. Yep. And it was full of games. So kids were convincing their parents, this will help me with my homework. And then they really want to play the games.
Right. Well, that's kind of what happened to me, my Commodore. But look here. It says, I like this on the ad. The ZX Spectrum software on cassettes. Available now.
Yes, but the expansion module incorporates the 3 functions of microdrive controller, which would get you 100K of storage for about $50. That's a lot of dollars per K.
Okay. Right.
It would also get you a local area network and RS-232 interface. You could connect it to your Spectrum, and you can control up to 8 microdrives, communicate with other computers, and drive a wide range of printers. Well, they only had 1 printer. I don't know how wide a range that is. I like the big yellow key features column. Full color, 8 colors each for foreground, background, and border, plus flashing and brightness intensity control. Sound, beep command with a variable pitch and duration.
Wow.
They're amazing. Actually putting a bullet item in the ad for a command to make a sound. This is just massive RAM, 16K or 48K. This is great. Makes me wonder what the other 16K was for. Why didn't they go up to a full 64? Unless... because the Z80 is an 8-bit machine. It can address up to 64K. So what was the extra 16 for? Maybe it was for ROM or for the video. Might have been for the video.
It could be. I was going to say the OS has to be on there somehow.
Yeah. Full-size moving keyboard.
Yep.
It seems ridiculous today, but high-resolution graphics. 256 dots horizontally and 192 vertically, each individually addressable for true high resolution graphics.
You know, I like the little blurb at the very top. It says 16 or 48K RAM, full size moving keyboard, like you mentioned, color and sound, dot, dot, dot. it's like sound. Yeah, it's got sound.
High resolution graphics, dot, dot, dot.
Right. Yep. I think it looks pretty cool.
Fun. This is just fun. Yeah.
I thought these computers looked cool. I remember seeing one on, it was Popular Mechanics. You know, I saw, was it Sinclair 2000? Sinclair 2000, which is very similar in design. But that's what I saw. Yeah. It had the, not even a membrane keyboard. It was like a, just kind of like that. Anyway, I saw one of those on the cover of Popular Mechanics, and I thought that was the coolest looking thing until the Commodore came around.
The ZX printer available now. The ZX microdrive coming soon.
Yeah, that little printer, let me tell you, is like we talked about the other day about the thermal paper. That's what that was. I don't even know if it had.
Oh, it probably wasn't even ink. It probably was thermal.
Yeah, a lot of the smaller ones had. I had a Sharp EL5500, which was a handheld computer, and the cover would slide off. It was great. You could do BASIC on it. Had a little calculator on the side, a scientific calculator. But it had a printer that went with it, and it was also thermal. So you could print receipts.
Where did I read the speed of the cassette deck? Now, you had to supply your own cassette deck, but the ad says it came with the leads, the wires, to connect to most modern cassette decks.
Some wires just hanging off.
And you solder them yourself. And it said, that's it right. Will save 16K in 100 seconds. Holy macaroni. Don't write a lot of code.
That's funny.
Of course, 16K might have been your whole memory capacity at that point.
Oh, now notice something here.
Yes.
Look at the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the layout.
It's generally a QWERTY keyboard.
Yeah, but look where the space is at. It's off to the side.
Oh, wow. It's like down by where the right shift key would be. The other thing that's notable about this particular that Sinclair did was multifunction keys. So you see all the words on and around the key?
Yeah.
It's the letter T, but it's also... let's still go with R. R is for run. So if you held down a certain key sequence, they were very proud. G for go to. They were very proud of the fact that their ASCII set included uppercase and lowercase.
So you could hold the function key down and just hit random keys and make some code.
There's like symbol shift. Each key had 4 or 5 functions per key.
That's, V is clear and flash, and I can't quite.
Yeah, it's a little blurry on some of these, just based off the resolution.
It's pretty cool.
Edit, define function, number one, or a square box character of some type. Like, fun. Yeah, this is good stuff. Good stuff. Thanks for finding this story.
Yeah.
I don't believe I'll be buying one anytime soon.
Well, there's always eBay, man.
There's always our patrons, too. We can always ask them to help pay. And there we go. Thank you to our patrons.
You need to work on those levels, man.
Was that a little loud for you?
Yeah.
Let me bring that one down.
I look like the Maxell, the guy on the Maxell.
Your hair blowing back?
Yeah, with a tie.
Sitting in the chair? All right, there. Hopefully that'll be a little better next time around. Thank you to our patrons. You help keep this show going. Craig, we need that banner. It's coming up. It's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
You keep the show going with the finances. The bills are paid. The hosting, the video. Now my video resolution is fine again. I'm not pixelated out.
Yeah, you're back.
Not sure what's going on there. Thank you, patrons. You fixed my video.
The patrons. Miss Tecorama's not watching a movie anymore.
Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad, Amy Bowen are among the people who help keep this going. Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, and Dandy Man Coyer, who was on earlier. Thank you. Thank you very much. Tim Cook, our Tim Cook. Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, who I hope we'll be seeing at Dragon Con. John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrauen, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, hope we'll find him there too. Mark Kilfoyle, Matt Baum, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media. Thank you, Stephen Weshey, Stephen Therrien. Try that again. Steve Therrien, Steve Cody, yeah, and Steve London. If you would like to get your name listed among this and get exclusive content available only to our patrons, you can find out more at patreon.com/technoramapodcast. So thank you. Thank you. Best part of the show right there. Except the part where we get rid of Charlie X. Oh, wait, that's the other show.
That's the other show.
All right. Now we get to the part where we talk about stuff we've been watching.
Yeah.
All right, Donna and I went through Upstairs, Downstairs, the new version, not the one from the 70s, on the BBC.
Okay.
This is also on the BBC, but it's on Hulu, and I was really saddened that there were only two seasons. The first one was three shows, and the second one was six shows, because they cram a lot in. It's like Game of Thrones, where they get a lot of story into 1 hour episode, and you really get invested in the characters. They do a great job. So I was sad to see it run so quickly. We went through that this week. A lot of fun. It is not a stuffy show. It is very much a drama. One of the key characters on there is Claire Foy, who also plays the younger Queen Elizabeth on The Crown. If you've watched The Crown, and I know many of you have on Netflix, this is the same Claire Foy, but she plays more of a Princess Margaret character on this one, where she's kind of the rebellious, unloved sister who keeps making bad decision after bad decision.
Right.
Lot of fun. And of course, the staff downstairs is pretty cool. They're not without their drama as well. So Upstairs, Downstairs on Hulu. If you want a honeydew show to, you know, watch with your spouse, it's good stuff.
All right.
What do you got?
Well, Kim and I just finished watching Ozark.
No spoilers. We still have three shows left.
I'm not going to spoil. I would never spoil anything. Everybody
Wash dies.
Yeah, Wash dies. No, but it. I think it was pretty good.
You forgot to turn our Patreon banner off. I'll get it.
Oh,
you keep talking. Okay. I'll get it.
I was trying to. I'm trying to talk about it without spoiling. Anyway, there was a lot to the season four because there's 100 threads. There's 100 threads floating around in the storylines, but they resolved to, you know, a good bit of them. So I'm not going to say anything because it freshly just came out on Friday.
Well, the second half of that season, already had six or eight shows for the season.
There were seven episodes in the first half, and there were seven episodes in the second half. But
that show just keeps getting really better, good, doesn't it?
And Julia Garner, who played Ruth.
Yes.
Man, she, what a talent.
She rocks it.
She nailed it.
Yeah.
And she sounds like she belongs there the way she's speaking, you know, of course she has a knack for cussing, but she does it well, but
she's more potty mouth than a sailor. Yeah.
But everybody did a great job. I think it was really cool. And then, of course, right after that is a Farewell to Ozark kind of documentary. And everybody's, you know, all the actors, you know, how they go, oh, everybody was so this. And
so that's the last season?
This is it.
Oh,
you didn't know that?
That show, you keep waiting for the whole house of cards to implode, don't you?
Like, well, you know, yep. Well,
so don't ruin it. Don't ruin it. I don't know if it implodes or not.
It is the final season.
Okay.
They only got four. So, but I think it was on Breaking Bad level.
Oh yeah, definitely.
In a lot of places. Yep. Too. Yeah. But Julie Garner, man, she nailed it. Everybody was great. I think even Jason Bateman was fantastic.
Everybody did a great job.
Yeah.
I'm going to wrap these next two into one because they do have the same starting title. It's called Conversations with a Killer on Netflix, but there's two different ones that I caught. One was the John Wayne Gacy tapes, and the other is the Ted Bundy tapes. And these are recordings. It's not just like four shows of listening to a cassette tape play.
Right.
There are excerpts from that help you get inside of the killer's mind. John Wayne Gacy was notorious in the mid-80s, I believe it was. He would lure young men, often gay men, to his house. He was a friendly, outgoing guy with ambitions, but he always thought he was bigger in the community than he was. You know, like, I got powerful friends and da, 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 da. Yeah. And then he, I think they got him for, what is it, 27, 28 deaths. Many of them were buried under his house. Yeah. When his basement or his crawl space became full, he started dumping them in the river. Very sad story. It starts out with one guy goes missing and they're trying to track him down. But meanwhile, they kind of do this like a cassette tape where it's rewinding and going forward. It's like, well, back in 1967, he did this. And then in 69, he was accused of that. And then they forward up to 1983. And so they're jumping around, but they do it in a very controlled fashion. You don't lose track of the storyline at all. But you keep hearing his voice and what he said after he was caught, but before he was killed. The other one is the Ted Bundy tapes. And both of these people, just like really frightening, really frightening. Yeah. And of course, we remember Ted Bundy. He was finally executed by electric chair in Florida in 1989 for the murder of, he was sentenced to death for the murder of a couple of young ladies at a Florida college. But he was ultimately tied to 33 murders in Washington, Oregon, California, Idaho, Colorado, Utah, and Florida. Like, he was really, and there may have been more because he stopped.
He was well traveled too. Sounds like.
Well, he escaped twice because of lack of security in Utah. It was really right. Frightening situation. But both of them really didn't have any sense of empathy, any sense of compassion, any sense mm-hmm. of caring. They really looked at people as objects, as property, and it was just really scary stuff. Towards the end of the Ted Bundy tapes, they do get inside his head when they started doing more. When they started this, they didn't even have the word serial killer, which was
right.
kind of weird. And if you watch, yeah. What was the FBI show that we were watching? Not Crime Spotter. I'll think of it later. Mm-hmm. But there's a wonderful, not a documentary, but it puts it in that time period of these FBI agents who are trying to figure this out. What makes these people tick? And they were doing some of these similar interviews. Like, what did you think? And how about your mother? And all this kind of thing. Ted was frightening from the standpoint that he was a normal looking guy. He was very charming, but there was just something off about him that a lot of women that were close to him, they even interviewed one woman that escaped. She's like, as far as I know, I'm the only woman who ever got away, because he was trying to put the handcuffs on her in his car. He only got one on and she jumped out of the car and got away. Like, wow.
Wow.
Wow, consider yeah. yourself lucky. And with John Wayne Gacy, they had something similar with one of the guys that got away. And it's like, it really was, it was chilling but fascinating at the same time. So, Conversations with a Killer on Netflix. One more for you.
Look, John Miller Jr., last time I spoiled a movie, I got sent to the Phantom Zone. Do you know how hard it is to break out of that Listerine breath strip?
That's one way to look at it.
Yeah.
I always thought it was a flat panel screen, but okay.
Right. I just thought I'd put this on here because I'd actually watched The Batman again. You know, Harrison and I went and see it. And then my wife is a little under the weather. So I was like, you know what? I searched Roku for 80s movies. I thought it'd be something that we could just sit there and watch. And, Batman 89 came up and she wanted to watch it. So we watched it. And I was just reminded
that wasn't the one with,
Michael Keaton.
Okay. No, that was 88. I thought, oh, maybe you're right. 89.
It's 89. Yeah, no, it's 89 because
Jack,
Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
I almost said Jackie Gleason. Like, imagine him as the Joker. Yeah.
Actually, Kevin Smith has done a comic book series called Batman 89, which kind of continued that Batman storyline a little bit in the comics.
Okay.
You know, with the same style, Michael Keaton kind of Batman. So anyway, so I watched that again, and that was, I just threw it on the list. It's not like anything we haven't seen before, but it's just fun revisiting that movie.
You wanted to sing that Prince song again, right?
Yes, right. There's a new Prince in town.
With the parade and
that's right. Oh hell.
Where anyway, does he get those magnificent toys or wonderful toys? What did he... there were some good lines in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It
was great. I thought Nicholson was a great Joker.
I think I had the soundtrack for that for a while on CD.
Oh, I had the 12-inch of Bat Dance somewhere, and it was like I remember it being like big yellow Batman logo on it.
Vicky Vale.
If you watch Shaun of the Dead, they're flipping through the records and they pull one out. It's the Bat Dance, and I went, I had that, and they threw it at the zombie. Anyway,
no, Craig's going at the screen. No,
not again.
All right, I think that brings us to the end of the show, which is fine because we are at 1 hour right now. That went fast, didn't it?
Yeah,
time flies when you're having fun or listening on double speed.
That's right. Yes,
we have a question of the week for you this time that we're going to leave you with. What kind of music do you listen to when you code or work? You're assuming those two are mutually exclusive. When I'm coding, I'm not working.
Some people may not code. Well, I thought I code for a living. You do too, from time to time. So I figured, I don't know, if you're doing some other work. That's what I was trying to get at.
I wouldn't say I code for a living. I make content for a living, and I write.
You know what I'm talking about. When I say code, I'm like a code. All right. So when I'm working, I actually spent some time working on the back end stuff I do for Dog Days of Podcast.
He listens to the Bat Dance. Just admit it.
Exactly
right now.
What I listen to. Now I'll tell you what I started listening to is Chill Hop, which is like. It's almost like there's no lyrics. Sometimes there are, but mostly it's no lyrics, and it's kind of lo-fi kind of music. It's like hip hop, but it's really slow tempo. It's you gotta go listen to it.
There is a
YouTube channel. You go search for Chill Hop, you'll find it, and they broadcast live. A lot of the music is I think it's copyright free, but you just listen to it, and it sets an atmosphere to sit there. And I used to listen to very upbeat stuff, like electronic kind of rave music, sort of like that. And that's fun, but it exhausts me. But this is a little different. So Chill Hop, that's what I work. What do you listen to?
I generally don't. I generally don't listen to music when I'm working.
Okay.
Nor podcasts, nor audiobooks either, because I'm usually focused on what I'm doing.
If I'm trying to read, it better not have lyrics, because if I keep focusing on.
Right. I find that the music, especially if I'm familiar with it, draws me into the focus on the music and not focus on what I'm doing. It's as good as if you were just reading a really good novel to me. Now I gotta like turn off the alerts, turn off the music, turn off the distractions. And knuckle down and focus.
The Sear belts? I'm not familiar with that. Is that a typo?
No.
It's a band. The seat belts. Okay. It's supposed to be seat belts. I have to go listen to them. I'm not familiar with them.
The Sear belts are now known as the Willis Tower belts.
The Sear belts. They play with the stakes all the time. Sear.
Okay. That's going to bring us to the end. Shall we do the outro?
Sure.
Sure. Thank you very much for all the hard work this week, Craig, with the stories and the show notes and everything else. If you would like to give us your answer to what you listen to when you work on the computer, send us a message on the listener line, 707-530-2428. 707-530-CHAT is all you have to remember. I know I said that a little quick, but we'll have it in the show notes. We'll have it on the screen.
It will be there.
We'll have it on the screen, like now.
Oh, yeah, that's my cue.
You can email us at technorama@chuckchat.com or find us anywhere on the social interwebs that you like. We'll post our question of the week on social media next week. Until then, thank you, everybody, who joined us live on the live stream Sunday nights at 9:30. That's where you can find us. Craig, give us a binary high five.
All right, 101. Hey, you don't make it easy for me to not pay attention to what you're doing. I'm trying to browse here.